You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 15 July. Chinese GDP out earlier this morning, 4.7%. Expected was 5.1%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Carmen Mapuwane. We're going to touch on that AVI update. Her and I have chatted about it before. It's strong, except for INJ. Sian Umonia from Satrix, how millennials and Gen Zs are investing. And then Simakelo Zwani from FNB on their Retirement Insights Survey. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Pick n Pay gives Sean Summers $100 million incentive to fix the real retailer. It's shares, so it could be a whole lot more or a whole lot less. But some of the T's and C's are like, I don't know, redo the organizational structure and get $50 million. Business Day, repo rate likely to mark time. The announcement will be Thursday. No change expected. Morning markets. U.S. was green, both the S&P and the NASDAQ up 0.6%. The Easter's mostly red. Sydney's up 0.1%. Tokyo is closed for Marine Day. Hong Kong down 1.5% and Tencent off 1.6%. Commodities red. Gold 2,414. Brent 85.14. Platinum 1,007. Palladium 961. The Rand is 17.98. Bitcoin 62,500. And top 40 opening call. Looking for a red open. 190 points or 0.25% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mapuwane, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning. You and I have chatted AVI a couple of times. Typically considered of the food producers that are listed, the better. I mean, HEPS up 21 to 25%. It really was a good set of numbers. They do say that INJ struggles. INJ seems to always a struggle, but another strong number from a really good operation.
Yeah, I know you're spot on with that. It's one of those shining lights where you get, you know, it looked like consistent growth in the company. You know, we've spoken, you and I, about the tough times we've seen in the economy, etc., but AVI's management seems to almost have the perfect solution. In terms of ensuring that pricing moves up adequately to counter cost increases, but in the same breath, looking at production efficiencies. And you can see that coming through in these numbers. Definitely, as you've mentioned, INJ continues to be a struggle, but it's one of those, I think, if you try to assimilate it to a agriculture, in effect, where you don't have much control of certain things in terms of pricing and catch, etc., that kind of you hope and pray that it works in your favor. Whereas, in my opinion, the rest of the business, you know, is more of a structured or maybe a bit more control over what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, INJ, we see it with the chicken producers, we see it with the other fishing companies. It is tough being a primary protein producer. You mentioned the revenue increases. I mean, we've talked about it before. They will sacrifice volumes to hold on to margins, and you might that might hurt them a little, and they might lose some volumes in the tough times, but it really does work for them, and they've come out the other side with the evidence of just how strong that mentality from the head office is.
Absolutely. You know, we had the discussion also around whether, you know, you look at a company that focuses on branding or we look at a company that, you know, focuses on house brands, etc. But they seem to have it bedded down, you know, with the big brands, the likes of Woolard's, the likes of Baker's, House of Coffees. And it does seem to be working in their favor continuously. So I definitely still find it a very interesting entity to look at. And, you know, with the few pickings we have at the moment, it's probably the one that gives you most sleep at night.
Yeah, absolutely. And also trading at the highest level in the last 5 years, which is not always the case in many stocks out there. We'll leave it. Carmen Mapuwane, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sian Mui. He's quantitative portfolio manager at Satrix. Sian, I appreciate the time today. You put out a recent post around millennials and Gen Zs and their investing habits. But first question, because a lot of my listeners are like, yeah, we've heard the phrase millennials, we've heard the phrase Gen Zs, but how old are they actually? I mean, what sort of age groups are we looking at in this particular instance?
Yeah, hi, Simon, and hello to your listeners as well. Always good to be on your show. So millennials is anyone born between 1980 and 1994. So they should be around 30 to 44 years old this year. And Gen Z or Gen Z are the younger ones born between 1995 and 2012. So between ages 12 and 29 right now.
Okay, gotcha. So it's in some cases very young, in some cases, I suppose, a bit more middling. What you've been doing, yeah, and you're a quant, so this is what you do in your fun weekends. You've been crunching data from the Satrix Now platform. And what you're showing is that they're actually the younger cohorts, these millennials and Gen Zs, are out there and investing, and in fact, in many cases, at a signing up at higher rates than older generations.
So we looked at the data from our online retail investment platform, which is the Satrix Now that you've mentioned. So, and we saw that this cohort is quite optimistic when it comes to their finances and investments. For one, they're looking at their deposits in 2022 and 2023, full years. Mm-hmm. They made about 57% of the inflow. So in headcounts as well, they make up around 56% of our tax-free savings accounts. So there's definitely a good trend there, showing that they invest more than any of the other age groups.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, one of the key things is that they're not yet at their earning peak either. Typically, the older generations are earning more, so yeah, can simply invest more. I imagine, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons. I suppose a part of it is education, and I suppose also part of it is access. You know, when I was that sort of age, I had to phone a stockbroker to buy something, and truthfully, that was intimidating.
Correct. I mean, this generation is also, they have access to a number of ways to actually educate themselves and learn more about financial products and make better decisions. And they actively seeking educational content through videos, webinars, social media, influencers, and podcasts that simplify investment concepts. So it's quite easier for them to actually have access to investments and also learn a bit more about them.
I suppose that's the point. And, you know, there's always been the traditional sort of media, whether it's TV, print, but it was always the complexity and the jargon. And whereas a lot of it these days, and particularly across social media and the like, it can just make it seem so much simpler, which truthfully, investing's not that rocket science, particularly if you're buying ETFs.
True. I mean, it's quite important, Simon, because, I mean, social media and peer influence seem to play a crucial role in driving investment trends among young people. That we've seen that. Mm-hmm. The fear of missing out, I mean, FOMO, watching and listening to social media influencers as well, discussing investments and savings. That actually drives these young investors to conversate more about investing. And then that conversation tends to flow into our platforms. And when looking at our investment channels, we have seen that 83% of registered accounts by millennials and Gen Zs are actually referrals. So someone somewhere in that transaction was influenced by another.
The good old-fashioned word of mouth, which is about the best sort of sense of marketing. Any sense what they're buying? I mean, obviously they're buying ETFs. It's an ETF platform. Yeah. Are they looking local? Are they looking offshore? Is it blend of?
This is the interesting bit as well. The trend has been retail clients are really just pushing to buy offshore ETFs because those recently came into market, and we've seen the ETF suppliers actually pushing more offshore ETFs to the market. So they're buying more of that. But if you're looking at clients around 40 and younger, the average is about 40% offshore. So even though they're buying more offshore, they still have a lower rate of holding in offshore, and 60% is local holdings. They still think that local is lekker. And also when you look at age groups older than 40, the local holding starts to actually increase with people who are 70 plus. They hold in local assets more than offshore.
I wouldn't have assumed that at all, but that is great news. And are they remaining long term? I mean, it's one thing to put the money in. It's another to resist the temptation to draw it out for one of many different reasons. Are they broadly leaving the cash invested and letting it use that benefit of time?
Yeah, so this is the challenge that we're seeing at Cetrix, Simon. So there's big positives when it comes to investing. They also tend to not stick it out for the long term, though, these young investors. So over the past 3 years, looking at our data, about 59% of this cohort actually withdrew. Not necessarily all their money, but okay. They actually did that action where they withdraw. So they pull back some of their money that they deposited. So younger people actually do maintaining long-term investments. It's understandable because they have challenges from financial pressure and economic uncertainties and all those things. So there's a clear need for more education on risk and tolerance and long-term investment benefits to address these challenges.
And I take your point as well. I mean, if we look at the last couple of years, it's been tough. You know, we came out of the pandemic. Yeah. We've got interest rates at records, not records, but at high levels. We've got high inflation. It's commendable that they can find the money, but I suppose it's realistic that at points, life's going to throw you a curveball, and this is one access to cash that they have.
True. And it's quite difficult to actually be remaining invested for the long term and you're facing these financial challenges. So you are bound to actually tap into some of those savings as well and also investments as well.
Yeah. But you did make the point that they're not necessarily taking everything out. And that does give them the good old fashioned power of the time. If you're starting in your 20s, even if you're starting in your 30s, and I know folks are going to say 30s are late, but you're going to live into your 70s, 80s or 90s. This can really give that power of time for what is left behind and invested and becomes hugely powerful.
Correct. I mean, we always mention that it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. So the earlier, the better. And also just staying invested for a long term. So it's quite important to start early, get more information on investments so that you can invest for the long term.
A last question that I just thought of, because of course, you know, I've been thinking this is a website. Truthfully, it could also be online. I mean, are they engaging via mobile or are they doing it a more traditional sort of desktop? Or is that not data you get?
It's not data that we have. I mean, we do have an app on a mobile where we have users actually using a lot of the app to check their investments and also do the investment. And also, at the same time, the Cetrix Now platform is also available online. So we get engagement on both sides, but it's quite important that we see people engaging more in terms of investing more on the products that we actually launch.
We'll leave it there. That's Yuen Nyomwe. He's Quantitative Portfolio Manager, Cetrix. Appreciate the insights.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Damian Samukela-Zwani, Head of Products at FNB Wealth. Samukela, appreciate the time today. The 2024 FNB Retirement Insights Survey just came out. The headline number is that 50% of people don't have a retirement plan, which is, it's equal parts scary. It's also quite sad. I mean, retirement is going to be a big part of your life, but a significant portion aren't planning for it.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Simon. Yes, Simon, it's a scary stat. You know, actually, 48% of people do not have a retirement plan and about 50% have a retirement plan. As we were unpacking the results, that 2% that's missing there, it's basically people who didn't know even what a retirement plan was. So when we're looking at that 48% of the people who do not have a retirement plan, we've picked up that 52% can't afford due to other financial priorities. And this is quite interesting because we then dived deeper into this. And what you realize is that the people are actually spending a lot of money on basic goods and services. So that is transportation, accommodation, as well as there's a portion that is also spent on debt, such that on the lower segment of the market, the entry market, they actually have only about 2% to spare that they can actually use towards retirement savings. And when you contrast that with the upper segment of the market, about 12% is actually left to spare to actually fund retirement savings. We further went on and looked at what are the other reasons that is actually stopping people from saving for retirement. And about 21% of the people say they do not have enough information around retirement saving. And that's coming out predominantly in the lower segment of the market where the people say would love to get more information, but we're struggling, you know, getting a financial advice because it's a bit expensive for us. But on the upper segment of the market, this is not really the case with regards to that. And then we have about 27% of the people, of that 48%, who are saying, listen, I don't want to actually take up a retirement plan. What I want to do is I'll rely on other strategies. And those strategies are government grants. About 13% say, I'll rely on government grants. 9% are saying, I'll actually rely on my spouse or my family in terms of retirement planning. We then went into the mindsets of these people, Simon, and to find out what is it that is basically happening with regards to the psychological aspect when it comes to this. So the three types of mindsets that we unpacked here. There's a mindset of resignation and defeat, whereby people believe that the retirement goal is just too much for them to even start contemplating. So they actually push back because it's quite a big goal for them to actually try and achieve in their lifetime. Then the other one is delay or procrastination. And then in here, we picked up two things. It's either there's an if and then mentality where people say, listen, I will start saving for retirement when I'm permanently employed, or I'll start saving for retirement when I've completed my studies. So that's the if and then mentality that results into procrastination. And the other one is the short-termism mindset, whereby people are basically using their money for short-term gratification as opposed to long-term saving. And then the final mindset that we also picked out is the avoidance and defeat type of mindset, avoidance and rejection, where people actually think about retirement as something that will not come. You know, either they don't think they'll get to retirement, or when they get to retirement, it's just going to be short-lived, 1 year, and they will not actually suffer much from not having a lot of savings in retirement.
Of course, in these days with retirement age somewhere in the 60s, we could potentially live for decades. A lot of this, I mean, a lot of it is a financial consideration, and you make the stark reality that there's a division between the wealthier and the less wealthy, and that is absolutely, it's a part of the landscape of our economy. But a lot of it also, it seems that there's just not enough information out there. Well, perhaps the information isn't being presented in a way which is being consumed by folks who don't fully understand the implications and the power of 20, 30, 40 years of saving.
Absolutely. People are actually looking for that information, and that information is in their head. It's not forthcoming or it's also expensive. So financial institutions have a big role to play with regards to actually dispersing that financial information. And then as we unpacked that 48% which do not have a plan, then we've got the 50% that have a plan. We're also interested in this 50%, Simon. And we went further and checked on them as well. Those that actually have a plan as to what is it, when are they starting to save, and are they confident about their retirement plan? So the first thing that we noticed that those on the lower income segment, they actually start saving pretty late. If you look at the entry market, they're starting at age 34. And if you compare that against the wealth market, those are starting at age 30, which means they've got a longer time in the market on average compared to the others. And then we went on to unpack their confidence levels around their retirement plan. Once again, we picked out that those on the lower part of the market, lower segment of the market, they're actually not even confident about their retirement plan. It's only those on the upper segment whereby they're confident about their retirement plan, the amount of money that they're saving towards retirement, and the fact that they'll probably retire comfortably. And then we unpacked the products that they're actually using towards retirement savings. In there were savings accounts, retirement annuity, as well as, you know, pension funds. And stock funds came out a bit here as well, Simon, quite interesting. And it's coming out strong on the lower segment of the market. About 33% of entry, they actually use stock funds as their vehicle for saving towards retirement. But on the upper segment of the market, their alternative asset class that they're using is basically property. The one thing that we picked up about the people who are saving for retirement is that they appreciate diversification of their income sources. So they're actually investing in a number of asset classes and in a number of investments so that they can actually meet their retirement goals. And then furthermore, they're actually fascinated and they're actually keen on financial discipline. And they're saying this is what actually enabling them to actually save more towards retirement.
I take that point, and I'm fascinated. Stock falls comes up all over the place in our economy, and we forget just how big that is. But we'll leave it there. So Makhela Swani, Head of Product at FNB Wealth, appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. How's your retirement plan going? Perhaps you're fully in control, perhaps terrible. Maybe you're already retired and it's gone great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Skulk Lowe on Friday, the details of the Pick and Pay rights issue. and that 100 million odd to Sean Summers. The rights issue, raising 4 billion. We asked if you will be taking up. Two-thirds said not holding, but of the rest, a fifth said, yep, going to be great, and the rest are going to sell your rights. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow, growing accessibility of alternatives.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.